This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 102.7 in Gauteng and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Time for your view from the C-suite here on Classic Business in partnership with Altron, bringing you closer to the business leaders around the boardroom table. It's where the interview rules are made up and market caps don't matter. My next guest began her career as an architect, actually, working 4 years in South Africa and Hong Kong on various projects. After obtaining an MBA from Wits Business School, she joined First National Bank's commercial division way back in 2003 and then spent 7 years working first in a private equity team funding black youth-empowered business and then as a leveraged finance deal maker. Now she spends her time making deals of an altogether different kind as executive director of the Manufacturing Circle, which is an industry group that lobbies for the manufacturing sector. Philippa Rodzith, great pleasure to have you in studio.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And I was going to say it's been a long time, but I saw you this morning at a COVID advisory event. So you really do get around with your Manufacturing Circle hat on, speaking for the industry. But I want to dial it back. I want to dial it right back, actually. Where did it all begin for you? Was the architecture dream a childhood dream of yours?
Yes. Architecture really combines science and art, and that's always enthused me. And the idea of studying something quite specific and focused, and buildings deal with people, with history, with cities. So it made a lot of sense to study architecture.
The reality often when you study something and the practice can be quite different. Why did you veer away from architecture?
Well, first of all, yes, the practice and theory is very different, which didn't bother me. One spends a lot of time studying design during varsity, but in practice, you know, on the ground, one's either a project architect or it takes a lot of time to those sketches when you hear about Howard Roark and the Fountainhead and those sort of visions are few and far between. And there's a lot more about sort of having to be bulldoggish about getting your details right on site and getting a project built, which can take quite a long time. I enjoyed that. I, however, felt that one architect in the family was enough. My husband happens to be an architect. We met in university, and I also wanted to just see if the grass was green on the other side. I just wanted to explore a little bit more about the world and see how business worked and finance and deals, and that interested me.
And you then decided to do the MBA at the same time as working at F&B? How did that go?
No, I took a plunge and just decided I was going to take a new path. So I left as an architect and, well, resigned from the architecture profession, although it's still very close to my heart. And then decided to study an MBA full time with a view to doing something different afterwards, but I wasn't quite sure what. So that is always very interesting because it certainly opens doors, but quite often, you know, when looking to transition into something, the general phrase was, well, you're an architect. I always wanted to be an architect. Tell me about architecture. And that I'd love talking about it, but, you know, the transition to something different, it did take a while, but it happened through networks. And
many of those networks that you built up doing the MBA, it's one thing you always hear about an MBA, and while technology is disrupting education and we can do distance learning and online learning, the one thing an MBA gives you is that networking.
It does. And, you know, it's a long time ago that we studied the MBA, but we still get together and we still share thoughts. And, you know, there was a huge amount of camaraderie that was built up, and that one can't put a price on. So definitely. I started in the bank in an innovative division, and then slowly learned the ways of the banking system.
And an innovative division indeed. I mean, private equity funding black youth-empowered business, and then obviously leveraged finance, very similar to what they do with private equity as a deal maker there for 7 years. Must have been a very interesting foundational period for you in that foray into the business world from architecture. What did that time teach you?
It taught me fundamentally about business and people and cash. Because that's really what it's all about. One can do larger deals, smaller deals, structured deals, but in the end, who are the people behind the deal? Where is the revenue offtake going to come from to service whatever it is that's funding the deal?
Yeah.
You know, and that's happens in many different iterations. So there's a lot of technicalities to learn about, but that's, you know, that's par for the course. But what I really loved was, you know, especially in the leveraged finance side, often it was funding buy-ins and buy-outs of owner-managed businesses or sometimes larger listed businesses, often in the manufacturing space. So doing those kind of deals, it required looking forward as opposed to just looking at a balance sheet and what a company had done.
Yeah.
Acknowledge that we weren't ever funding hockey sticks as far as cash, you know, revenue projections were concerned. But very interesting to understand the dynamics of, let's say, manufacturing businesses and seasonal cash flows, you know, thin profit margins and a lot of innovation and long-standing businesses as well.
But coming back to your point about people being the fundamental or the foundation of what you're doing here, if you go into a family-owned, family-managed business, perhaps a family business that's been operating in the sector for 40 or 50 years, they might want to be exiting at a particular stage or they might want to remain invested. You have to understand the reasons behind going into partnership with family-owned businesses. It's very different to a managed or professional managed transaction. And I think here of what's going on with Telkom and Cell C and MTN, that's a far more corporatized world to the owner-managed space. Do you think that prepared you to a large degree for what you currently do for the manufacturing circle, which is about lobbying, it's about relationships, it's about building rapport and deal-making of a different kind?
No, absolutely. I tend to like to get my hands dirty. I like to understand the nitty-gritty of what's going on and the dynamics of a business. And understanding motivations and, you know, what it is that we need to do to achieve something or problem solve is definitely put me in good stead in the manufacturing circle. And in fact, when I look at it, nothing that I've done has been wasted. The architecture side of things, a lot of manufacturing, you know, there's technicalities. It's about making things. It's about processes. I will never say to the engineers that I know as much as they do. Because I studied an MBA with the majority of engineers, so I know what they think about architects. But I do claim to know a little bit about, you know, understand the technicalities and what goes into making something, which is important because it's about how it all fits together, what are the supply chains, what are the inputs, where are the connections, joining the dots between different companies, maybe seeing where there might be opportunities to link up different manufacturers and, you know, within a value chain. So on the architecture side, the creativity and the technicality, and then certainly on the, you know, on the banking side, because a lot of this is about maybe a business is growing or maybe a business might be having a certain challenge or access to finance. I was at the Africa Investment Forum this week, for example, and that's at a larger scale. You know, I could sit, for example, in a panel session where there were institutional investors and sovereign wealth funds talking about funding into multilateral banks and development funding institutions and then how that trickles down. And it didn't scare me because the principles are all the same and there's always a lot of different acronyms. But once you break it down, it's, you know, once you sort of understand it, then you can apply it in different ways. So it's definitely helped.
You joined in 2015. So you've been executive director now for 4 years in the manufacturing circle. It's a tough role, and it's the role, in essence, of a lobbyist for the sector, to lobby government for the right policy, to be the voice of the various members of the manufacturing circle. And I just want to get your sense, Philippa, of some of the ethical questions that you grapple with, because I know business and government haven't tended to see eye to eye in South Africa. There is a deep distrust across the divide. There has been for a very long time. We seem to be coming closer together, thanks largely to things like the Public-Private Growth Initiative. The new administration under the president is far more receptive to business. It certainly has made out that it is so. How do you approach this hat of lobbying And it can be an ethical minefield. We see it happen all over the world. How do you approach it?
Well, I would say first and foremost, with pragmatism and with integrity. And interesting that you say lobbying, because not only are we looking at lobbying with the government, I also have to lobby within industry as well.
Yeah.
Manufacturing circle, it's plays a very important role as the voice for the manufacturing sector. But industry as well is in some ways quite fragmented.
Yeah.
So it's about what is it that we jointly feel is important to grow manufacturing and in so doing grow the economy in the country. So if one takes it from that position, it's not actually that difficult, because you know, those are objectives that are close to industry and government, and really the role is about increasing an understanding between the two parties. And there are some ideological areas and issues where we'll just agree to disagree.
Yeah.
And given that the economy is in a challenging position, and more so manufacturing, having said that, I'm the eternal optimist and we will turn it around.
I know, we're always looking for the green shoots, you and
so,
I.
So we've got to be mindful with where we spend our energy, and this needs to be in practical, implementable solutions. And we've put a lot of time in our Map to a Million document, which we put out 2 years ago and still holds true as to where are the blockages, and not to growing manufacturing and not pointing any fingers, saying, you know, what is it that industry needs to do? What is it that government needs to do? What is it that the two need to do better together? And then really identify these work packages and get on with them. And this move towards master plans for various subsectors, I feel, is a positive space, because it's an understanding that it's quite a complex ecosystem and manufacturing.
Are those master plans, and I listened to Godfrey Mashamba mention them at the COVA event this morning, are those master plans part of the public-private growth initiative?
They are connected, yes. And as far as public-private growth initiative is involved in that process. And we need basically industry and government as role players. So they're playing an important role in that that process. And it's really because it was originated out of the fact that automotive has worked quite well in that regard. Proactive, long-term planning, master plan kind of approach, and then what is it that we can do? How can we replicate that in other subsectors of the economy? So
use what's working, and it really has worked very effectively. It also has come with a certain degree of incentivization from government, and that's what we're talking about this morning at the COVA advisory event. Interesting to listen to Godfrey Mashamba of the Department of Science and Technology talking about working on making it easier to apply for things like R&D incentives, and the target now, a turnaround time of 90 days. It still seems like a very long time, but at least government, and you read through National Treasury's paper, the penny really seems to be dropping, that we need to do a lot more on that high return on equity R&D incentive versus other incentives in the economy. What's your take on that?
Well, the incentive space is important in motivating and driving manufacturing, because otherwise we are not operating in a level playing field. So what is it that is going to convince or incentivize a manufacturer to keep production facilities here, as opposed to picking up the phone and ordering a container of finished goods to be imported from elsewhere? So the incentive landscape is a very important component of the manufacturing environment. It's a balancing act as to how and where those funds are allocated, and that's something, there's no hard and fast rule. Mm. We know that on the R&D space, we're not spending as much as we should, and also incentives play a role in counter-cyclical activity. So if, for example, business is in a very difficult position and unable to fund disciplines that are going to to be beneficial in a longer term, you know, that research and development word, or maybe investments in more efficient production, more efficient machinery, for example. That's where government can step in to help that, you know, balance that counter cyclicality. So that's very important. As to the question of, well, where should the majority be assigned, the lion's share does go to automotive, and that's very clear in the stats. So where is it, and how is it that we can drive other parts of the sector? Because automotive is very important, but we also can't put all our eggs in one basket. So that's really a discussion that has to take place in a nuanced way. Research has been done by, you know, the various departments as to where the expenditure takes place, but then also input from industry as to what is it that we need, what would kickstart things, what are we investing in, where could we get more of a hand, and building this rapport, because it's also about, you know, from policymakers' point of view, there's often this there's this requirement for reciprocity. If as government I'm going to provide an incentive, what is it that you know, we are going to see as a result? Is it jobs?
Apart from profit and paying more tax and and creating jobs and all of those things that tend to flow from growth.
Yes, absolutely. So that's my role as the lobbyist and the diplomat, to try and see things from different perspectives.
Now, Philippa, you say that obviously in industry, business leaders don't see eye to eye. You're positive about where we are heading and the general directionality of the country. I know a lot of people are frustrated with the slow pace. Sometimes that just is the politics. What is the one message you'd want to get out to other business leaders at this time that we find ourselves in South Africa?
We don't have any more time to keep our cards close to our chest. Sometimes we're in a position where we need to look at what is important for the country as a whole, and how can we balance in this ecosystem. And there needs to be space for everybody. So manufacturing needs to exist, and this is where I'm talking from my manufacturing hat, because if we don't have that as the core of the economy, we're not going to be able to service things, we're not going to be able to transport things, we're not going to have you know, the pull for baseload of services and utilities. So there's a place for everything. We've got very sophisticated and important financial services sector. Retail is also important, but we need to see how all those link, so that you know, in the end, it's all about balance and trade-offs, let's say, in the deal-making sense entirely. You know, and in some cases, it is cheaper to import tins of tomatoes to put on a shelf, you know, to get to the consumer. But we need to also be mindful of what's happening in the medium to long term. So really, it's about, I'd say, having a, let's say, more open mind, using the skills and the innovation that we have in a collaborative way to really grow this economy and this country, because that's essentially what we all would like.
Philippa Rodzith, Executive Director of the Manufacturing Circle, thanks so much for sharing your view from the C-Suite, which is brought to you by Altron, technology partners in your digital transformation journey. For more information, visit them at altron.com. Altron, there when it matters.